In the next few minutes, you will hear a story of intrigue on this series, Voices from a Mighty Pen Project on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean. The Mighty Pen Project, founded by Richmond author David L. Robbins in partnership with the Virginia War Memorial, provides writing instruction to veterans and their supporters. In this series on the Virginia Voice, they share their stories with you. With me is Chris Nags, who is going to read to you his story, Detected. Chris, before you read your story, give us the background of Detected.
Yeah, the story is actually relatively true, purified to keep clear of any classification issues, of an incident that actually happened to my submarine, geez, almost 40 years ago.
That's
during the height of the Cold War.
Here is Chris Nags reading his story, Detected.
The message told the submarine Potato to return. Return to the Barents Sea. Return to observation of Soviet naval activity. Return to exhaustion, tension, and possible glory. Captain Paul Addario read the message to his officers. A collective groan by all, then fake enthusiasm engendered by brave small talk. Addario, stoic and stone-faced, ordered the sub back. The captain's calm demeanor belied an acidic stomach, an intuition that their luck could not hold. 5 days ago, on an intelligence mission off Murmansk, Pintado ran into a submariner's dream, at least a U.S. submariner's dream. Several Soviet surface ships circling a point in the ocean. Something lost for sure. For days, Addario made periscope observations, collected sonar data, took pictures, even went below the surface ships for underhull photography, found evidence of an aircraft crash. Addario ran the sub west off Norway to safely report findings, expected to be congratulated and told to come home. Instead, the message said, go back, observe and report. 2 days later, the Pintado ran at flank speed. 600 feet down, the ship moved only 300 feet from the bottom. Sonar was blind. The sub's own propeller noise drowned out the sound of pursuers. Battle stations had been called. Captain Addario couldn't believe he had been detected. How was that possible? The sub's watch stations were manned. Captain Addario stood over the geographic plot crammed between the periscope stand and attack center. The executive officer and weapons officer stood opposite the captain. On the plot, tissue paper was hurriedly laid over the chart of the ship's current position. Small pencil lines marked location of the threat. Addario's butt rubbed against the head of the sailor manning the torpedo control console. Addario moved closer to the geoplot. Attention in the control room! Addario barked over the noise of excited jabbering. Shift speed closed in on 20 knots. The ship control team did not look back, concentrating on maneuvering at a high bell. We may have been detected. As you heard, a couple active pings got us. Sonar believes those pings returned energy. One of the Soviets, a Kashin-class destroyer, turned towards us. Addario had never been hit by an active sonar except in exercises. 25 years in the Navy and not once had he been detected. He had never even heard of a U.S. submarine being detected. The control room, quiet, subdued, tense. 100 miles off of Murmansk, there would be no help. Addario spit a hair chewed out from his beard. Last periscope observation showed 3 destroyers up there, as well as the Mosva. I intend to run at speed for another 5 minutes. Then we'll do a sharp turn and go quiet. If they follow down our last track, we might be able to drift away. The torpedo room was ordered to load an evasion device in the single ejector. Over 2 dozen pencils were sharpened and laid on the plotting table. Like surgeons ready for an operation, the officers grabbed parallel rulers, dividers, and erasers from enlisted men. These men sat at the feet of the officers to save room. 7 people wedged into the space of a small bathroom. Every man had avoided touching another. On the control stand were 2 displays. All eyes craned to the displays. One showed broadband noise. Addario concentrated on that one. It might be possible to see active pinging despite the noise from Potato's own propellers. The other display used for narrowband detection. This picked up high-frequency indicators from pumps, electronic devices, and rotating equipment. Both displays whited out. Anxious fingers pointed out potential detections. Adario knew nervous, wishful thinking when he saw it. Right full rudder, make your depth, 6 1 3 feet, all stop. Adario and all the control hung on. The ship heeled over 20 degrees in the sharp turn. Steady course, 185. Adario's orders were repeated and acknowledged. The ship slowed with the rudder acting as a partial brake. Sonar reported hearing active pinging from three sources. Small dots appeared on the broadband detector. That would be our guys, Adario said. Start plotting. Skunk 1 at 345, she's another Kashin. I'm not worried about her. Skunk 2 is the destroyer turned towards us. She's due north. That's the bastard that got us. I still don't understand how. Skunk 3 is a warship. Maybe a Bereznik frigate type. Never got a good look at her. Sonar reported the loud, multiple propeller noises of the Mosva. Mosva was a helicopter carrier and pride of the Soviet fleet. Sonar thought Mosva had also turned to the south. Mosva meant helos up and looking. Captain Adario made stars on the paper to indicate an estimate of Soviet ship positions when this debacle started. The submarine could tell direction of the pursuers, but not distance. These directions urgently plotted every 30 seconds. Speed drifted down to 10 knots. The pinging could now be heard through the hull. An obnoxious two-tone whistle. The sound different than in the World War II movies, but just as annoying and dangerous. These systems, unique to the Russians, told all on board that hunters were smelling prey. Sonar reported bottom bounce information from the pinging. Rough distances could be determined. These were plotted. The first pencil broke. The Soviets were closing in. Sonar, do they have us? Adario glared intently at the two sonar displays. The active pinging propeller signatures of the surface ship showed up brightly in large traces. The display looked like a summer lightning hit on a clear horizon. The bearing rates of the contacts got more rapid. That meant they were closing. Sonar, do they have us? Adario pounded the plot. Captain, don't think so, but look at the narrowband. In between the pinging, I've got pump noises, submerged pump noises, 170 degrees. Everyone in view of the narrowband display stared into it. There were two slight parallel lines tracing down the screen. In just seconds, two more slight, barely distinguishable lines appeared. At exactly the same moment, the captain and sonar announced, "Submarine to starboard!" A crescendo of noise increased in control. The executive officer told everyone to shut up. Come on, sonar!" Adario hissed through clenched teeth. He didn't want to interrupt sonar while they were classifying. He sent the XO to sonar to hurry things up. The surface pinging got louder, more personal. Touching the man's shoulder behind him at the weapons console, Adario said quietly and firmly, "What tubes are loaded?" Several around heard the request, raising eyebrows. The officers plotting immediately returned to drawing bearings on the surface ships. They put a big question mark on the paper at 170 degrees. Only two of the four tubes have warship torpedoes loaded. Still in contact with the sailor's shoulder, Adario ordered, "I know you've been loading targeting information on destroyers. Keep doing that, but your priority will be this sub once we get data." Still drifting, Pintado eased silently to 3 knots. The ocean, a symphony of noise, pinging, surface ship screws, flow transients on the broadband were now audible through Pintado's hull. Narrowband showed additional traces coming from the south. The XO ran the 15 from the sonar shack to geoplot, tripping not once, but twice. He looked alarmed. Not one sub, but two subs, a Victor II and a diesel boat. The diesel boat, probably a Tango, maybe a Whiskey, only heard because of a bad shaft rub. Distance unknown, but both submerged, together, and probably out 10,000 yards. Left full rudder! All ahead flank! Set course north, make your depth, 250 feet. A chorus of disapproval erupted in control. This would take Pintado right at the deadly destroyers. Not only that, but going shallow would make it easier for them to hear. Despite misgivings, the orders were followed crisply. No talking now. Second-guessing would stay internal. Catholics made the sign of the cross. Protestants did the same, just in case. God or no God, the crew trusted Addario. Addario left the Chio plot, taking one step onto the periscope stand, announcing, "Attention in the control room! Attention in the control room! We walked into a trap. Don't know how. Doesn't matter. My intention is to aim directly at Skunk 2, the middle destroyer. We're going to go right under her as close as we can. Let's confuse them in their own noise." Sonar reported losing all contact with the submarines through the speed increase. The surface ship picking got louder and more rapid. The geoplot said the other two ships were changing course. Bearings indicated a turn towards Pintado. "Our problem is those two submarines. We are being herded by them towards the surface combatants. Pintado is going to scream by the surface ships. Then we'll go deep, turn 60 degrees, launch an evasion device, and go back to this north course. Then we go ultra quiet. I don't know their intentions, but we're only 100 miles from Russia. We're making a lot of noise now, so I want warships loaded in all tubes. Do not repeat. Do not open the outer torpedo doors. If they hear that, they might start shooting. This might be just a game of hide and seek, but you never know with these Bolshevik bastards." The nervousness of the watchstanders eased despite the real danger. There was a plan. It was always better with a plan. The sub, now at full speed, oared depth 112 feet. Sonar had long lost the submarines, but sonar not needed to hear the surface echo ranging. The pings of the central destroyer rattled off the subs. Those who could covered their ears. Ping, ping, return. Ping, ping, return. Ping, ping, return. Then just a loud noise, whistling, obnoxious, scary. Almost to a man, every sailor looked up as if they could see the ship just a few feet above. The churning of two distinct propellers on the port side shook gauge glass. Standing man hung on, waiting for a collision. "Okay, ease the boat down to 600 feet. A quartermaster shouted out that the secure fathometer had only 650 feet there and getting shallower. "Okay, dive. Make your depth 550 feet. The depth dangerously close to the bottom at full speed. The pinging was lost in Pintado's own stern noise, but the broadband display still displayed the energy in the water. Geoplot kept track of the bearings, plotting calmly and precisely. Still, pencil tips broke open. 2 minutes later, Geoplot saw the change. The closest destroyer had started turning. Rubbing his hands, Addario gave the exo a thumbs up. He was slow. "Helm, get ready. As soon as he regains us, we turn. Prepare to launch the countermeasure." Every minute, the sub raced 1,000 yards away. The plot showed the destroyer turning to follow Pintado's last bearing. The audible echo ranging returned. Addario took a deep breath. Then three more. A positive active sonar returned from Pintado sense. Low energy. Weak. Sonar reported the destroyer going to flank speed. The captain ordered his first turn. The destroyer had a sniff. At the end of the turn, the countermeasure was launched. The turn, ship speed, and burst of compressed air sent the device a few miles an hour at a right angle to the boat. 180-degree turn now, ordered away from the countermeasure. Sonar announced that the countermeasure had activation. An ocean filled with the sound of 1,000 Coke bottles with fizzies dropped in. The purpose of the device was bubbles, millions of bubbles, time-release bubbles. For miles around, there would be no passive sonar hearing at all. For a couple miles, active sonar underwater picture looked like an endless fog. Pintado ran at high speed as the countermeasure worked its magic. Addario estimated the sub had made almost 4 miles from the drop. "All stop! Rig ship for ultra quiet! Sonar, find me those subs!" In ultra quiet, the sonar did something counterintuitive. Sailors broke from their battle stations and went to their racks. Unless at a watch station involved in the fight, You went to sleep. Shoes came off. Pockets emptied. Watertight doors closed in case of flooding were now open. All pumps and fans secured. No talking at all except in whispers, and only when required. The reactor was set into a low power condition. Steam was allowed to leak in the engine room to prevent accidental overpressures. Recirculating fans always ran in the submarine. A white noise unnoticed until it stopped. The fans off now. The silence a measure of desperate nets, as loud as any echo ranging. The remaining crew and control put up all coffee cups, cigarettes, and manuals in a bag loaded with towels. Ultra quiet was a big deal. Most of Potato sailors had never done it for real. Some junior officers hung around control. They wanted to help, be part of the action. The XO pointed them down to the next deck and made a sleep sign with his hands. No exceptions for anyone. Sonar no longer passed word over the loudspeaker. They shuffled notes to the geopod. The broadband played solid white, propeller noise, echo raging, and even rudder movements, even evident in dark street. The countermeasure began to die, but still inundated the sea with noise. Then, through the hall, the muffled sound of explosions. Not loud, not close. A series of three dull retorts. A 10-second gap, then three more. The explosions were coming from the direction of the countermeasure. As Pintado slowed to almost zero, the bearings of the three echo-ranging surface ships came together. They were attacking the device. Turning, speaking softly, Adario told the weapons technician, "Open the outer door on all tubes, one at a time, slowly. Tubes 1 and 2 will be for the surface contacts, say 3 and 4 for the submerged." Deliberately, the captain walked away to the geoplot to a console over the quartermaster's plot. It had a series of army devices serviced by red, then yellow, then green lights. This would launch a beacon activated by seawater if control was flooded. The U.S. Navy would then know Pintado was lost. There were two positions on the beacon. One said peacetime, the other said hostile action. Adario moved the selector to hostile. For nearly an hour, the sub sat 100 feet off the bottom. The depth charging continued, but scattered with seemingly less enthusiasm. The countermeasure died and sunk to the bottom. No sign of the Soviet subs. The two destroyers and subs and frigate easy to track from their echo ranging. The closest 14,000 yards in opening. A note from sonar said that Moskva, the helicopter carrier, was exiting the speed at high speed, probably heading back to Murmansk. With fists now unclenched, Adario said, "That's a good sign. The Bolsheviks don't want to lose the pride of their fleet. The surface wanks have lost us. Damn, where are those subs?" Almost on cue, the sonar supervisor came out, pointing up at the narrow band display. The display unremarkable, except for a tiny line due south. The Victor boat was coming out of the noise. Distant unknown, but moving between the Pitano and all the theatrics at ease. If it kept going, it would present its stern in less than half hour. The Victor sub data loaded into the weapons computer and assigned a tube through. No sign of the Tango or Whiskey. Diesel boats hard to hear on the battery. No shaft noise now. Still a real danger. As the Victor got closer, the narrow band brace grew stronger. Shortly, that trace was joined by other thinner traces. Each trace corresponded to a pump, generator, and a particular steam nose. Sonar thought they heard pots banging in the Victor's galley. The enemy sub's propeller noise showed up on the broadband. Range now estimated at 6,000 yards with strong confidence. A dead-on stern shot. The Soviet would never hear the torpedo. The boat would just implode in a million unrecognizable pieces. The officers on the geoplot would support the captain anything, but unspoken, a disbelief that had gotten to this point. Adario gave them a half smile and shook his head. There would be no shooting, not now at least. The biggest threat to Pintado moved quickly away. The victor never knew how close to vaporization it had been. This gave Pintado a chance to get away. A suggestion by the XO to move further north, ease up the contours of the bottom. Once more distance had been between the surface ships, then gradually move east and then south to safety. Captain Addario agreed. With the Russians now shooting, it was important to get that info back to Washington. Yet Addario wanted to wait until night. Nighttime always cut down on the aggression of skimmers. Subs lived in the dark, cherished it. Warfare today largely electronic, but humans still hated fighting in the dark. In the back of Adario's mind also was that diesel boat, still unlocated, still dangerous. For the next 8 hours, Pintado sat quietly. Some of the restrictions of ultra-quiet relaxed. A trim pump needed to keep depth turned on. The cooks allowed to serve cold food. Sonar tapes continued to run in sonar. Every second of a sub's deployment captured on tape. These would be used by the spooks to analyze contact, local sound conditions, and even the biologics encountered. When declassified, the tapes often given to oceanographic institutions to track whales and dolphins. The captain and sonar team listened to the tape made prior to the detection. No singing screw, no loud noises, no transient that should have alerted an enemy to Pintado's presence. In the meantime, new tapes recorded the pinging destroyers and the dying traces of the victor. The sonar team finally picked up the diesel boat, surfacing and snorkeling. A few slight maneuvers by Pintado put this sub well outside 30 miles. Pintado powered up and began a slow, quiet transient around the area of interest. Torpedo tube doors closed and the regular watch section set. Captain Addario bounced a fist off a knee. Up nearly 30 hours, but no sleep came. First, he had to compose a succinct message of the day's events to Sub Lant. All hell was going to break loose, an administrative and political one. Second, all the charting using during the encounter required label and interpretation. An inquiry would ensue. A U.S. sub being detected, almost unknown. Being detected in a Russian sea, worse. The event would be classified at a top secret level, but word would get out to some congressman. An inquiry inevitable. There would be need for a scapegoat. 48 hours ago, Addario thought making Admiral was a lock. Now the possibility of a court-martial. In 6 hours, the message could be sent in safety off Norway. The last classified briefing Addario ever attended was that inquiry he dreaded. Analysis of the tapes did not indicate a noise problem on Pintado. The escape considered clever but risky. An incredible amount of intelligence had been collected. Yes, a Russian bear bomber had crashed there with nuclear weapons aboard. The Soviets could not allow the possibility of a U.S. recover. Depth charges had been dropped to get Pintado surfaced, and even possibly destroyed. It appeared the diesel boat, confirmed as a Tango, wandered into the evasion device and got attacked by her own friendly forces. Still, Pintado had been detected. There must have been a lapse in periscope discipline. Too much time in one spot. No one knew for sure, but faith in the technology was absolute. If Pintado had been caught, the fault could only be human. That human was responsible. Captain Addario wanted to dispute the findings of the inquiry. The problem was they could be right. Also, it was lucky the motto had been set at inquiry rather than a court-martial. As a company man, Addario accepted his fate. At his change of command and retirement ceremony, the Pintado's crew was bitter, but accepting. The big boys lived in a strange world. Captains came and went. Good ones sometimes got screwed. Bad ones sometimes got promoted. The sailors never got a vote. Addario walked down the pier with his family. He no longer had a ship. In 8 hours, he would no longer have a navy. At the same time in Washington, the Federal Bureau of Investigation was making an arrest. John Anthony Walker, a retired Navy communications specialist, was arrested for spying. He had been a Russian spy for 20 years, specializing in compromising radio traffic and submarine operations. The New York Times reported that it's been estimated by some intelligence experts that Mr. Walk provided enough code data information to alter significantly the balance of power between Russia and the United States. The end.
Chris Maggs reading his story, Detected. You're listening to Voices from the Mighty Pen Project on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean. Chris Naggs, the story you just read to us revolves around sonar, both our sonar and enemy sonar.
Correct.
How does that work?
Well, I talked a lot about it, and I hope it wasn't too technical, broadband and narrowband. Broadband noise is noise. Think of it as the human could hear. Narrowband is very discrete, high frequencies that think of like a dog could hear. So when you hear pinging and propeller noises, broadband picks that up. Sometimes you can pick that up thousands of miles away. If sound conditions are bad, sometimes you can't ever pick it up. Narrowband is high frequency, okay? That's stuff that goes into the water that humans can't hear, but electronics can't. Pump noises. Very good for classifying ships. You can tell what type of ship. Sometimes you can know on a submarine, maybe a surface ship, even who's driving it by how they're using their electronics and their machinery in the ship. So it's broadband and narrowband. Active sonar, that's that pinging. Bing, bing, it's active sonar. Submarines almost never use that, because it gives them away. I mean, as soon as somebody puts active energy in the water, you know exactly, they might find you, but you know exactly where they're at, okay?
So if somebody is pinging a sub, the sub knows it's being pinged?
It knows two things. One, it knows that a surface ship is using active sonar. And they may not be hearing the sub, but you can tell surface ships are out there using it. That's the big complaint of environmentalists with bothering whales and everything, because surface ships are almost always out there searching. And you can hear that sometimes, like I say, hundreds of miles away. But you can also hear when that active sonar gets you, because you can hear it hit you, and you can hear the return start. It may be subtle. They might not hear you back, but you can tell you're starting to get caught, all right? And that's when you need to get away or do something else.
In your story, the captain had never been pinged before, never been detected before.
Right, never except in practice. Expected, never been detected.
In actual combat, never been detected.
Correct.
And am I correct in the story? It was sabotage?
Well, that's what we don't know, all right? This John Walker was one of the worst spies in the history of the United States. He basically gave out coding information to the Russians. The Russians were reading all our traffic for years. So we as a submarine don't know. You can never really know. Maybe someone knows in the big locks areas of the National Security Agency whether they read our traffic or not. But the presumption was that when we came up and reported we had found this unusual going on with all these surface ships, that we had given the location that they had launched submarines into there to wait for us to come back. They knew we were coming back. But you don't know. Maybe we did make a mistake. Maybe we were too close. You know, you'd go up and you put your periscope above water for 2 seconds, because the radar can get that. And you take a look. Click, picture down. Change position. Look, picture down. So you never know. Maybe someone got a sniff. All right? We didn't know. But the presumption is that when bad things like that happen, it's always the captain's fault. So.
But the title was Detected. The story is suspenseful.
Thank you.
Chris, thank you.
Thank you very much.
The program to which you are listening is the audio version of The Mighty Pen Project. The Mighty Pen Project was founded by Richmond best-selling author David L. Robbins in partnership with the Virginia War Memorial to provide writing instruction to those who have experienced our nation's military events, either through their service or as a supporter of the military. Each of those involved in the Mighty Pen Project have a personal story to tell you. The Mighty Pen Project teaches them how to tell it. Voices from the Mighty Pen Project is an ongoing series on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean.